Hello, everyone. Lee Arnold back with you for another edition of Country Music Conversations. Recently, the Country Music Hall of Fame announced the inductees for the class of 2023. Three very special individuals, each with a unique talent: Tanya Tucker, Bob McDill, and Patti Loveless. A couple of months back, we featured Tanya Tucker in one of our podcasts, and I see it only fitting that today and next week, we honor Bob McDill and Patti Loveless. But before we start this conversation, here are a few words from our sponsor. Country Music Conversations with Lee Arnold's podcast is made possible by our sponsor, MarketSmith, Inc., the digital media agency that's been growing brands like Tumi, SharkNinja, New Jersey Lottery, PSE&G, Blue Mercury Cosmetics, and Dick's Sporting Goods. You know what makes this agency so good at what they do? Because simply being a marketing agency is no longer enough. Solution-based, problem-solving, and ever-evolving, they create enduring value for DTC and B2B brands by opening up and growing marketing channels. Their patented AI offerings, informed by human intelligence, allow them to act with agility and intellect. I was speaking with the CEO not too long ago, and she was saying they take on clients who know who they are, who want to grow, and clients that know what they want. These big brands choose MarketSmith because they want to merge with a partner who'll make them exceptional and an agency that will grow their revenue. Digital marketing is not easy, but MarketSmith, Inc. knows when to make the media dollars work hard for their clients. You have a brand you want to grow? Well, contact MarketSmith.com and tell them Lee Arnold sent you. Today we'll be featuring songwriter Bob McDill. Ed Morris, the renowned Dean of Country Music Journalists, said it best when he wrote this about Bob McDill in 1985 upon Bob's induction into the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, when he said, quote, "If country songwriters had to pick one of their own to represent that bridge between the traditional and modern styles and sensibilities, they probably would turn to Bob McDill," unquote. During his career, Bob wrote or co-wrote 31 number one country hits. His songs have been recorded by Don Williams, Waylon Jennings, Ann Murray, Johnny Rodriguez, Janie Fricke, Mel McDaniel, Ronnie Millsap, and Crystal Gayle, among others. And in the pop field, The Grateful Dead, Joe Cocker, and even Ray Charles. Bob was born in Beaumont, Texas, and as a child, he sang hymns around the piano on Sunday afternoons. He took viola lessons at the age of 4. At Lamar University, he studied English and played in a band called the Newcomers. While in the Navy, he developed a friendship with songwriters Dickie Lee and Alan Reynolds. After the Navy, all three settled in Memphis, and in 1970, they moved to Nashville, where they joined music publisher and producer Jack Clement. Jack Clement's GMI Records released a solo album of McDill's called Short Stories. Two songs from that collection became hits for Johnny Russell and Don Williams. The songs were Catfish John and Come Early Morning. In 1976, he had several songs in Crystal Gayle's album, Crystal, and Bobby Bear recorded an entire album of Bob's compositions called Me and McDill. In the 1980s, Juice Newton cut 4 of his songs that appeared on her albums that went gold and eventually platinum. In 1986, Dan Seals scored With Everything That Glitters Is Not Gold. Don't Close Your Eyes by Keith Whitley went to number 1 in 1988. And 2 of Mel McDaniel's biggest hits, Louisiana Saturday Night and Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On, were McDill compositions. Bob continued writing into the 90s, including the hit Gone Country by Alan Jackson. Our conversation with Bob took place in Nashville in 1986, just after he was inducted into the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. He told us about the stories behind many of his hit songs, his work in Memphis, and how he got to Nashville. Here now is Bob McDill.
It's not every day that we have a chance here to talk to a member of the Country Music Songwriters Hall of Fame. And we have the latest prestigious member just elected this past year, Bob McDill. Bob, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Lee. Good to be here.
When I think about all your career in country music as a writer, I guess you really came here. You haven't been here really, well, I guess, what year did you come here?
1969. Seems like a long time now. Seems like centuries.
A lot's happened since 1969 when you first came here. What motivated you? Was songwriting your dream at the time? Were you in another business, in another area? You're from Texas, aren't you?
Yeah, Texas originally, but I was living in Memphis, working in a studio trying to learn R&B music. I was an assistant engineer and playing a few sessions, and the Memphis scene down there was sort of beginning to fall apart. And a little company I worked for was bought out by Jack Clement in Nashville at the time, and I had the option of staying in Memphis or moving to Nashville, so I chose Nashville.
When you first came here, I guess things didn't go the way you imagined, or as every young songwriter imagined. Nashville can be the toughest town in the world. You probably feel that you have some of the best material or the best songs to offer the public, but it's another matter to get them heard.
Well, you think you do, but when you look back years later, you realize you didn't have the right songs at the right time, and the town teaches you to write those songs. It took me quite a few years before I could make a living writing songs here.
I guess if I had to single out one person in the entire country music business, Don Williams certainly had a great deal to do with Bob McDill's songwriting career. That friendship goes back a long time.
Yeah, I had the last, I wrote the last single the Pozo Seco Singers ever did, Coming Apart, and that's where Don and I met each other and started our association. So it goes back quite a few years.
What is so unique about Don Williams? I know that when you hear a song by him, and particularly a song that you have written, it takes on a very special quality. It seems almost like you write for him.
Well, he says it's because we're both from Texas and both country boys. I don't know, but we also both have a folk music background, and Don really is a folky. He doesn't come out of that rocker background or country background. He comes to country music from a folk music background. I sort of do too, so we have that in common.
That had to be a great affinity. Folk has a very close relationship to country music because it's basically almost the same thing.
Yeah, maybe the lyrics are a little different, a little more poetic sometimes, a little more sensitive, but it's country music too.
You have had an incredible track record as far as hit records are concerned by almost everybody. I mean, Bobby Bear has done Bob McDill albums. There's so many other examples of people who have done your material, both as singles and also as album product. Was there a time, and is there still a time in your songwriting career, where you get a dry period, where the ideas don't happen for you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Right now.
I'll rephrase that. Have you ever found that there's a dry period, Bob, when the ideas just don't come and you can't write the way you'd like to write?
Yeah, and the further along you get in life, you know, I guess I'm middle-aged, I'm 41, the more demands there are on your time, the more pressures, the more family responsibilities, and it's really hard to shut all that off sometimes and just think about songs. But that's what separates the men from the boys, I guess. You've got to do it anyway, somehow.
I'm sure that you probably had some influences as a songwriter whose other songwriters' work you liked and enjoyed and more or less were an influence for you or an inspiration. You must have some songwriting heroes yourself.
Yeah, Paul Simon and Roger Miller are probably my two biggest heroes. Yeah, and then Robbie Robertson of the Band is a great hero of mine, too.
Who are some of your favorite singers who you've enjoyed over the years that have done your material kind of surprised you? You didn't figure that the song would turn out the way it did or the way you had written it.
Well, Don always had has a way of making a song more than it was when you wrote it. Dan Seals, I think, is a great singer right now. We've been writing together, and I think we have his next single, and we had one together last year. Let's see. Well, there are a lot of them that I really love.
I guess part of the excitement as a business is singing new talent coming along, singing your songs outside of the true and tested singers like the Bobby Bears of this world and Don Williams and those other singers have been popular for so many years in country music.
New singers?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of new guys. Mel McDaniel is, everybody thinks he's new, but he's been around as long as I have, and he and I have had some success lately. Dan Seals, of course, used to be England Dan of John Ford Coley. Those guys are new on the country scene and really have recently become stars, but they've been around a while just like all of us.
Do you really have a formula for writing songs? Everybody goes about it in a different way as a songwriter for the creative process. Is there any particular way that you go to create a song as far as an idea is concerned? How do they come?
Well, anything's enough to build a song. It might be a guitar lick. It might be an idea for a title. It might be a piece of melody. It might be one line of lyric. But you just take that, and that's the inspiration part, and the rest of it is all craft, and you take that and build it into a 2.5-minute drama, you hope.
You've been here since 1969, and you've seen an awful lot of songs, heard an awful lot of songs, and seen an awful lot of songwriters. How has songwriting generally in Nashville changed since the era of 69?
Well, most of the changes have been musical. It's a lot more complicated musically now, even though it's still not complex. You can do all kinds of things now musically that you couldn't do 10 or 15 years ago. And the lyrics are a little less specific. Nobody wants to do a cheating or drinking song or any of those things anymore. The old standby country themes are gone. But I think most of the changes have been musical.
When I think about songwriting in Nashville and Bob McDill in particular, what kind of songs do you personally enjoy writing most? Because you've written the entire spectrum. You've written ballads. You've written up-tempo songs. You've written songs with very clever and ingenious hooks. What songs gives you the most kind of pleasure to write creatively?
Oh, the ones that really say something, the ones that have a little point to them. When I'm not writing, when I'm just writing a commercial song, we call that hacking, you know, and I've certainly done plenty of that, and you have to make a living, but the ones that really mean something to you later are ones that come from the heart and really have a point about life rather than a point about, rather than the standard story, she's gone, I'm sad, you know. The ones I love.
How many songs have you written to date? Can you recall approximately?
I don't know, a lot. I think I've had about 250 recorded at this point.
How many did you throw away?
They're all back there. We don't throw them away, but the business sort of throws them away for you because nobody records them, you know.
Not much of a choice.
Right.
If I had to pick out the quintessential Bob McDill song, which is very difficult to do because they all are so very special and meaningful to everybody who listens to your music. The one song that sums up, I guess, sensitivity and life and the beauty of just a song that is just perfection is Amanda.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think that's sort of an exercise in simplicity, that one. On the other hand, I think that one of the other, my favorite probably, is Good Old Boys Like Me, which is an exercise in complication probably, but I love those two equally, I think.
At the time when Amanda was done, I remember Don Williams did it many years ago, and then Waylon Jennings had a big hit with it. There were really two completely different versions of that song.
Yeah, it's funny how one guy can sing the same lyrics and another guy can sing them and they really don't mean the same thing, isn't it? It's really funny.
Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On. one of the biggest songs that you had in the past couple of years, and also one of the biggest song, I guess, Mel McDaniel ever had.
Yeah, first number one for Mel. Mm-hmm.
How'd you get the idea for it? Is there a story on that?
I had the melody for I'll Bet You a Year, and that little phrase, da-da-da-da-da-da, right at the end, I kept waiting and waiting for a phrase that felt good and just sort of fell out of your mouth and was tonal and everything, and one day that little phrase occurred to me, and I thought, well, nobody wants to hear songs about blue jeans anymore, that's passé, and I thought, well, that sounds so good, I'm just going to take a shot and see if I can make it, something a little more memorable than just the standard song about the girl in the blue jeans, you know.
It had a feel of the 60s to it. It was almost like a mental picture listening to it. The structure of the song, the arrangement of the song, brought me back to something that was a pop or rock hit in the 60s. It had that sound to it.
I don't know what the song was. I really don't. But it does sound like it's kind of reminiscent of maybe late 50s, early 60s rock and roll. Yeah.
Good Old Boys Like Me, you just touched on that. Very complicated thoughts, but yet at the same time, it's so introspective. It's more or less like it's like looking at someone's diary, or as a songwriter, looking directly in the mirror and revealing everything.
Yeah, that's you get lucky when you have a hit on a song like that, because we've all got a few like that are written just for ourselves, just for art's sake. And when somebody records them, you're shocked. And then when it's a hit, you're really shocked, you know. I never thought the public would like that, but they did also.
Another one of the songs which met with a great success, Bob, was one that was done by Waylon Jennings called I May Be Used, But I'm Not Used Up. Was that it?
Yeah, that was, I was hunting up in Chesapeake Bay about a month ago, and the guy, Ken Maxwell, who's a goose guide up there, we went through, he kept naming all these songs of mine he loved, and that guy, I guess he's about 50, Ken is, and he found out I wrote that, and I went up 10 feet in his eyes, you know, he never had any idea I wrote that. The guy sort of felt like that was his theme song at the age of 50, you know.
It's so true, because everybody can relate to that, whether you're 50, 20, or 30, depending on how you lived.
Yeah, that's right. Number of miles on you, I guess.
Recently, there was a big hit for John Schneider, which really was a breakthrough record for him that you wrote. And the song goes back really to 1978, when there was a version of it by Conway Twitty called I've Been Around Enough to Know. And turned out to be a very, very big song for John Schneider.
Yeah, Dickie Lee and I wrote that way back there. You've got the year. What was the year?
78.
78, yeah. And everybody around here always loved the song. It was a great record on it by a French artist, Cajun artist, Joel Saunier. And everybody around here loved it, and we kept pitching it. And finally we found John, and John agreed with us that the thing could be a hit, and it certainly was.
Another one that I've always loved, I think people are familiar with, of your catalog, is a Mickey Gilley song, who's done some of your work, Too Good to Stop Now. Any special story on that one, Bob?
I just love the record. I love what the producer did with it. I thought it was a beautiful session, beautiful guitar lines that probably had as much to do with it being a hit as the song did. You know.
Do you ever have input or give your input when you hear a song of yours recorded by a producer in which you feel it didn't come out the way you had expected or had hoped?
Yeah, I guess about half of them you love and about half of them you wish they had done something else with. But you don't really have any say in that. Once you make your demonstration recording or put it down with a voice guitar demo or whatever, your creative part's over and it belongs to somebody else then, you know.
Recently, Ed Bruce had a big hit of yours, a very cute song called You Turn Me On Like a Radio. Clever title.
Yeah, Jim Weatherly had that title. Came in one day. We'd been working together, and we really had a lot of fun writing that, because it's just kind of a natural. Every once in a while you have a title that you visualize the whole thing as it has to be. You know, it has to be a play on the radio by the bed at night and the whole thing. It was a lot of fun writing that.
There's a song of mine which, I don't know, there's something about the melody, there's something about the lyric. I guess the only adjective I can come up with is haunting, a song that Anne Murray recorded by you called Somebody's Always Saying Goodbye.
Boy, that thing's a sort of a surprise. You know, we were talking about Amanda and Good Old Boys, but I've had a lot of people interview me and say, that's the best thing you've ever done in your life. And one time Anne Murray on a TV show said it was the best thing she'd ever recorded. And it's really surprising. I guess sometimes the songs you think are so simple and are really more than you think they are. And I guess that's an example of that.
Mood-wise, when you sat down to write something of that sort, did you sit down with, do you have to hurt to write something that good?
No, you just have to be you have to be in the habit of being able to put yourself in a situation. You may have just, won the lottery, but if you've got a sad song to finish, you've got to get your mind in that situation, that position, you know.
Another one of your songs, I guess 1982 is a big year for Janie Fricke, and a song of yours called I'll Need Someone to Hold Me When I Cry. I don't think anyone could have done that better than Janie Fricke.
I don't either. It was a great record. Jim Ed Norman produced that on her, I think. It was right after they got together and really brought her back. I think she was in a cold period at the time. That's a little clever title that, I think Waylon Holyfield and I wrote that together. A little clever title that we got the most out of, I think.
Another one which we all like from 1981 is a Mickey Gilley favorite called Overnight Sensation.
Yeah, that's a little risque, as a matter of fact, and my mother's always been embarrassed that I wrote that. In fact, Mickey was embarrassed one time to play that on a live date because the lyrics are so risque, but the people in the audience wanted him to hear it so badly they made him play it, if I remember.
There's really a tawdry part to Bob McDill, and there's really a dirty old man in somewhere inside there who likes to write songs like that.
Well, I like to write what's fashionable and what people want to hear, and at the time, that kind of lyric was fashionable, yeah.
Another one of your tunes from 1980 was a big song for Ronnie Millsap and really gave it a very special feel. Why don't you spend the night?
Yeah, he really did give it a great feel. That was a great record, and that song's been recorded so many times in Europe. Frankie Miller and a bunch of Scottish, English, and French artists have done it. It's a pretty big song, as a matter of fact.
Every artist who does your material brings something special to Bob McDill's music. Another example, going back, I guess, to 1980, was Crystal Gayle and one of your songs called I'll Do It Over Again.
Yeah, I think Waylon Holyfield and I wrote that together, too. That was sort of that kind of thing musically was fashionable at the time, and we got into that little piano riff, I think, and the song came out of that piano line, Chuck Cochran did it on piano on the session, and we sort of played it on guitars that way, but it was the musical part that started, that was the seed for that idea.
How important, touching on that, Bob, going a step further, is an arrangement as far as enhancing material of yours or any other songwriters? Is the arrangement equally as important in a percentage ratio as far as a hit record's concerned?
Oh, yeah, it's very important. Equally as important, I guess. The first thing a writer does when he finds out the artist has actually recorded the song, his publisher may say, well, so-and-so did your song yesterday. The first thing the writer says is, did it come off? That means, did it really sound great in the studio? Was the arrangement there? Was the feel there? And did the artist turn in a great performance? Those things mean everything.
Another one of your tunes that I guess was the first big hit for Mel McDaniel that you wrote, which is really such a great sounding record, Louisiana Saturday Night, that has that Cajun feel and spirit to it. I have a feeling that you're a great affinity for Cajun music.
Oh, I really do. Cajun music, Cajun food, Cajun people, everything. I grew up in Beaumont, Texas, which is right near the Louisiana border, and I had a bunch of French relatives. And there's a place over in North Nashville now that's serving gumbo, and I've been there every day since they opened.
Thank God they came here, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to go back to Beaumont for your Cajun food. Another Don Williams song, touching on a few of the songs that he has done, that you wrote, and it's almost the same thing. You're a laid-back writer, and he's a laid-back singer, so I guess the the marriage musically has worked, particularly with a song called Turn Out the Light and Love Me Tonight. Now, DW does very few up-tempo things, or did in the past. There was a period he was really into ballads.
Yeah, that's one of the few real up things he's ever done, and probably one of the few sexy songs he's ever done. But it was a big hit for him. I'm glad he did it now, looking back. I hope he is.
Another one was just a killer song called She Never Knew Me at All.
Yeah, I had that darn thing for, I'll bet you, 3 years. I had that idea and that melody. I tried to co-write it with Alan Reynolds, who he and I gave up. And then maybe a year later, I tried it with Dickie Lee. He and I gave up. Finally, Waylon Holyfield and I one time got into the thing and got a few lines that we liked. And finally finished it and made it happen. But that's probably one of the hardest hard work songs I've ever written.
Do some come instantly and others take a great deal of time to write? Or can you get a line or a melody line or an idea or a thought and then it just sits there for a while?
The last one that came instantly was Amanda. I wrote that in 30 minutes, I think, and when I was 27 years old. And that's the last gift I've ever had. Ever since then, it's been real hard work.
Hey, boy, that's an incredible story. Another one of Don's songs I've always liked and everybody loves, big hit for him, Cole. Nobody Likes Sad Songs. No, that Ronnie Millsap. Nobody Likes Sad Songs.
Yeah, Wait on Holyfield, and I wrote that. That was his idea, and we just worked with that a long, long time and got every line just like we wanted it. And then Millsap made an incredible record, so we have to give him a lot of compliments, too.
Someone who's been in Nashville for a long time and had his personal problems and now has, as they say, cleaned up his act and is back in the business, recorded one of your songs back in 1977, Johnny Rodriguez, with a song called We Believe in Happy Endings. Such a beautiful melodic thing. There's such a good feeling about that song when you hear it that I think that women particularly can identify with that.
Oh, yeah. Every woman I know loves that. The way that got written... we were snowed in here one time, and Nashville doesn't do well in the snow, and nobody could get outdoors for weeks, and my wife and I sort of got cabin fever, and we got on each other's nerves, and had four or five arguments there that really were pretty big arguments. You can imagine being stuck together for 3 weeks at a time, and at the end of that period, that song, I think, came out of that situation, you know.
Recently, there was a hit in 1985, last year, Mac Davis with one of your big favorites called I Never Made Love Till I Made It With You.
Yeah, that song had been around for a year or so, and everybody around here thought it was a hit, and finally Mac proved that we were right. Sometimes we're right. Sometimes we're wrong.
What's been the most gratifying part of the music business and songwriting for you, looking back through the years as you reflect?
Well, the most gratifying part is that actually writing the songs and to write one and have it finish up like you visualized it and really be perfect and every line does what you want it to do, and then to have somebody record it and do a beautiful job, and then to hear it on the radio, and it's still a great thrill for me.
We're talking briefly before about the new infusion of people from other types of music who are moving to Nashville, and Nashville becoming the music center with ex-people in rock and in pop music like John Hall of Ocean and Dwayne Eddy, who has moved here, and a lot of people that had success in rock and roll music and pop music like Billy Joe Royal are happening in country music today. This has become the alternative music, but there's still a lot of doors to be opened.
Yeah, and I've issued the challenge to you and all your radio friends to give us a format out there, because I think this town, there's so many talented people here. You know, we were talking about it before the interview, and gosh, the music that's happening here is not just limited to the old country formats. And I know there are a lot of disillusioned 30 to 40 year old people whom rock music doesn't speak to anymore. And I hope it continues.
Where do you see country music going? 1986 and 87.
I see just more of the same, more people in the Dan Seals mold, Restless Heart mold. If we can just if they can just be aired on the radio and have a chance, I think that's where the town's going, because the musicianship and the writers and the people are really here in town.
Bob, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day, and just say it's been a delight coming back and talking to you. About 8 years ago, we did one, an interview, got right. together, and it's great to be able to update it with a lot more hits since that time. And Lord knows you really are a role model for every songwriter in this business who has had really the cream of the crop and the best with everybody, and we wish you all the very best in the future.
Well, thank you, Lee. I really enjoyed it.
What a career, and what a modest guy, Bob McDill, who at the age of 79 has made it into the Country Music Hall of Fame. Join me next week for a conversation with Patty Loveless. Until then, Lee Arnold reminding you to stay safe and keep it country.